from WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the Reporters Roundtable. Liam Mayo from the River Reporter, Chris Rowley from the Shawangunk Journal, Joseph Abraham from the Sullivan County Democrat, and Phil Pantuso from the River Newsroom sit down with our own Patricio Rubio to discuss the topics that are making news in their area, including the care center in Sunset Lake, the potential closing of Castle Point's VA hospital, climate, and the fate of the Novell Resort. Plus, Dale Blagnerov is here with Pride Time. He's talking about the Anti-Violence Project. John Vega joins him with a wellness segment, and Sarah East Johnson talks about Catskills Pride Social happening today. That's all coming up. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal is accusing Russia of waging war against civilians.
The situation in Mariupol is terrible. This is the biggest humanitarian catastrophe during this and maybe during last centuries.
Prime Minister Shmyhal speaking in Washington after talks with U.S. officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken. An advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said today that Russian forces are attacking the steel plant where the last Ukrainian defenders in Mariupol are holed up. He says airstrikes have resumed on the Azovstal plant and that Russian troops are trying to storm it. There is concern about trapped families inside the plant. Efforts to establish a humanitarian evacuation route have repeatedly failed. The mayor of Bucha says the process of collecting and exhuming the bodies of people killed during the Russian occupation is coming to an end. The BBC's Danny Eberhardt reports that so far they have found 412 bodies, more than a third of those killed in the Kyiv region.
Evidence of atrocities carried out by Russian forces during their occupation of Bucha, a small city on the outskirts of Kyiv, shocked the world. Civilians killed, apparently indiscriminately. People whose hands were bound, shot in the head. These exhumations reinforced the sense of scale of the violence. One mass grave contained the corpses of 117 people, including 30 women and 2 children. The main task, Mayor Fedoruk says, is identifying the dead. This could be difficult for those whose bodies were badly burnt. All will be reburied with more dignity. Investigations for war crimes and crimes against humanity continue.
The BBC's Danny Eberhardt reporting. Marathon negotiations have resulted in an agreement by the European Union to enact sweeping legislation that puts far more responsibility on tech giants to police online content and to limit the targeting of consumers. And as Terry Schultz reports from Brussels, the penalties for failing to comply could be massive.
What's illegal offline must also be illegal online. That's the slogan used by advocates of the new Digital Services Act. EU policymakers agreed early Saturday to a package of measures, including a requirement that online platforms quickly remove harmful or illegal content, such as hate speech or child sexual abuse. E-commerce sites such as Amazon must stop the sale of illegal goods. Tech giants must be more transparent about algorithms, prohibiting the use of gender, race, or religion to target users, and online advertising to children is banned. Fines for non-compliance could run up to 6% of annual global revenue. Approval from the European Parliament and policymakers in the 27 EU countries is still required, but considered a formality after this agreement. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
This is NPR News. Strong winds are fanning the flames of wildfires in the southwest. The biggest, the Tunnel Fire, it's burning near Flagstaff in northern Arizona. Hundreds of homes in the area have been evacuated. More than 24 have been destroyed. Cindy Garcia's home is the only one left standing on her street. She did not evacuate and says she won't because of her horses.
I'm not going to walk away from them. I can't. It's just nothing you can do. Nothing. And I won't walk away from them. I can't.
More than 1,600 firefighters are battling flames in Arizona and New Mexico. The fires have led to the evacuation of several small communities near Santa Fe. It was a tough week on Wall Street. The Dow fell for a fourth consecutive week, and NPR's Rafael Nam reports that investors are bracing for higher interest rates this year because of inflation.
Fighting inflation remains a top priority for the Federal Reserve. Fed Chair Jerome Powell made that clear by indicating this week that the central bank could raise interest rates by half a percentage point at its next meeting in early May. That's twice the rate increase we saw in March. Investors are anticipating more rate hikes ahead and worry the actions could push the economy into a recession. All three indexes posted a weekly loss, with the Nasdaq down nearly 4%. Companies also reported earnings this week. The big shock was pandemic-era darling Netflix. Shares slumped after saying it suffered its first quarterly loss in subscribers in more than a decade. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
And I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering Capital One Shopping, a downloadable browser extension that searches various sites for shoppers. What's in your wallet? More at CapitalOneShopping.com. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every month we bring you news and information from local journalists in our area, and they're talking to Patricio Rubio. Our own Patricio Rubio sits down with the folks from the River Reporter, the Shawangunk Journal, Joseph Abraham from the Sullivan County Democrat, and Phil Pantuso from the River Newsroom. It's Liam Mayo from the River Reporter and Chris Raleigh from the Shawangunk Journal. Talking about the issues impacting our area, it's the Reporters Roundtable.
Hi, my name is Patricio Rubio, and I'm a producer with WJFF Radio Catskill. Welcome to another edition of the Reporters Roundtable. Today, I'm joined by journalist Liam Mayo of the River Reporter, Chris Raleigh with the Shawangunk Journal, Joseph Abraham from the Sullivan County Democrat, and Philip Pontuso from the River Newsroom. Before we get to our roundtable, just to let you know that the Reporters Roundtable is now a podcast. Search for WJFF, the Reporters Roundtable, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. The issue with the care center at Sunset Lake is an issue we've been following here on the Reporters Roundtable. This week at the legislature, the topic of patient care has come up, and the quality of patient care has come up since the transfer of the care center's management. Liam, if you want to tell us exactly what's the new update with the care center at Sunset Lake?
Yeah, so the new concerns about the care center at Sunset Lake have focused primarily on patient care currently at the facility. A lot of public discussion in previous months has centered around who controls the facility and how the taxes are being managed. But at the legislature's most recent meeting, and I believe at the LDC meeting before that, various members of the public and of the Sunset Lake Care Center Family Council came to talk about the levels of care at the facility. They basically said there weren't enough staff at the facility to properly take care of all of the patients. Catherine Scott, who's the vice president of the Family Council, talked about how there just weren't enough staffers to have all of the residents eat together. So they were being given meals in their rooms for certain meals. There weren't really enough staffers to put people to bed at an appropriate time. So they were having to go to bed really early some nights. And there were even some issues with like caretaking and the cleanliness, people being more prone to falls. Her own mother had fallen recently and I believe broken her hip. So there was kind of a personal investment in that as well. And the result of it was basically just they need more staff, and they need more staff, and potentially they need more oversight. On the staffing side, the legislature and Family Council talked about the work the LDC and the management company for the care center, Infinite Care, has already been doing to get staffing. They've been advertising for staffing. They've been trying various things to get more staff into the facility. It's the reality of the situation is there's a nationwide nursing shortage. So it's not just as easy as hire more people. It's there might not be those people to hire. Family council members talked about how if there really aren't enough people to take care of all of the people in the facility, maybe you shouldn't be accepting so many people. And apparently the limit that Infinite Care had set for the facility had been exceeded a few times, although it was currently at sustainable levels. And the other thing that was talked about was legislative oversight. Neither the LDC that currently controls the facility nor Infinite Care, the management company, had gone before the legislature to sort of explain what was going on at the facility. And the legislature sort of agreed that that needed to happen. So it's still a developing situation. Care there is an ongoing concern. And the legislature is going to try and look into it, is right. The current status of that.
But did the legislature have any response to the sort of the concerns that were brought up in the rules recent meeting?
Yeah, they were pretty responsive to the concerns. And I think a lot of a few different legislators said that they had received calls and comments privately as well, raising concerns about care at the facility. So this isn't something where they were shocked to hear any of these comments at legislature. They've been hearing this on their own as well. And their response to it was the need for more oversight. They needed to, they said they were going to try and get the LDC and perhaps also Infinite Care, the management company, to come to a later meeting of the legislature. I don't know as of yet whether that is confirmed to happen, but that's something to keep an eye on and see what ends up happening with that.
To you, the VA hospital, reading your reporting in Sullivan County Democrat, that the possibility of one of the sites near to Sullivan County is closing. What can you tell us about that?
Yes. So the VA recently submitted recommendations to the Asset and Infrastructure Review Commission to, quote, modernize and realign the VA healthcare system. There is a proposed belief that the veterans population is going to substantially decrease in the next 10 years or so. So nationwide, the proposal would see 35 VA medical centers across the country either close or be rebuilt. None of this is finalized yet. The Asset Review Commission is going to be doing public hearings before anything gets submitted to the even higher powers that would start making the decisions. But essentially, in Sullivan County, the Veterans Service Agency provides transportation to local veterans to two different places: Castle Point, which is in Dutchess County, Wappinger Falls, which about 80% of them go to, and that's for more straightforward health care, not like urgent things. And the other 20% go to Albany. Albany is a very large facility, much bigger than Castle Point. People usually go there when they need to get two or three things done, more complicated medical procedures or treatment like dialysis, et cetera. So under this proposed plan, Albany would be rebuilt completely, which is fine and dandy to local veterans, but the Castle Point location would close. And we are essentially in the metro New York market, because there's different markets across the country that the VA has broken up the different sectors into. And they think that there's going to be a 23% decline in the local veteran population over the next 10 years or so. And I spoke with the head of the Veterans Service Agency, John Crotty, in Sullivan County. And, you know, he's very much against Castle Point's closure unless they build another facility on this side of the river, which he says would be the responsible thing to do. Right now, what they would do with Castle Point is they would, certain programs would be delegated out to community providers, and other stuff would be sent down to Montrose, which is another VA hospital. I'm not 100% as a transplant, even after 6 years, how to describe Montrose to listeners, but it's pretty much on the other side of the Hudson, about 33 to 35 minutes south of Albany, not Albany, of Castle Point. So, you know, Mr. Crotty was pretty much saying that it's just a little bit of a hardship. It's not an easy place to get to, because you've got to cross the bridge down at Bear Mountain, or at least when you cross the bridge in Newburgh Beacon, Castle Point's right there. So he's those are pretty much the concerns of local veterans, that, you know, sort of the access to care, and if that would be more of a hardship on them. And ultimately, if they do close it, like I said, he said the responsible thing would be to build bigger hospital on this side of the river, because he doesn't believe that Montrose would be able to handle that increase. So,
and how far is Castle Point from Sullivan County?
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on where you are in Sullivan County. I know from Liberty, it's about an hour and 10 minutes. So if you're in Calicoon, it's about an hour and a half. If you're In Wurzburgo, you're looking at probably, you know, 50 minutes, 45 to 50 minutes. So this is a straight shot. It's right on 17 and 84. So.
Right. What are the next steps now?
Yeah, it's a long process. Pretty much now, political leaders are going to start getting involved. I believe some political leaders out, Philip's way and Chris's way out in Ulster County, have already spoken opposition to Castle Point's possible closure. But the AIR, like I said, commission is going to be doing public hearings, and they're going to be submitting their own recommendations to the president for further review in 2023. So like I said, at the earliest, any further recommendations wouldn't be until then. So this is going to be a few years off before anything actually happens. But local veterans are hoping that throughout the process that people can fight to either keep Castle Point, you know, open, or a better alternative be provided if they close it.
You listen to the Reporters Roundtable. I'm joined by Leah May of the Free Reporter, Chris Raleigh with the Shawanakuk Journal, Joseph Abraham from the Sullivan County Democrat, and Philip Antuso from the River Newsroom. More after this.
On a recent Wait Wait, Karen Chi wondered about the new high-tech system that baseball catchers are using to communicate with pitchers.
Is it like texting? Because then it'd be nice if the pitcher, you know, could periodically just send a text that's like, keep it up, I love you.
I'm Peter Segal. We'll be sending our messages of affection to you subliminally on this week's News Quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
We start rocking, there ain't no stopping. All we do is rock.
Rock is life. Life is rock. Rock is rock and roll. Keep saying the word rock.
Yeah.
And you'll be...
You'll land in the right place.
Naomi and Crystal have a Riot Girl garage rock band that played original songs about movies at the Calicoon Theater. Fun, laughs, a massive amount of rock here at Sunday evening at 7 on Sunday Stage.
Don't let them tell you because you can't sell records. You can't be who you are.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's the Reporters Roundtable. We're going to rejoin our own Patricio Rubio talking to Liam Mayo from the River Reporter, Chris Rowley from the Shawangunk Journal, Joe Abraham from the Sullivan County Democrat, and Phil Pantuso from the River Newsroom.
Welcome back to the Reporters Roundtable. I'm Patricio Rubio. Today I'm joined by journalist Liam May of the River Reporter, Chris Raleigh with the Shawangunk Journal, Joseph Abraham from the Sullivan County Democrat, and Philip Pontusel from the River Newsroom. Yesterday was Earth Day, and this week was Earth Week, so happy Earth Week, everyone. Now, Philip, the River really does extensive coverage on climate. You have the Climate Lab talk about climate on the local edition on Tuesday. What can you tell us about the latest, what the River Newsroom is working on?
Yeah, so the latest story that we've been looking at is last Thursday, the Public Service Commission at the state voted to advance the plan. And it's met with some controversy, which is a little bit surprising, maybe. Power cable called the Champlain Hudson Power Express. And this has been a proposal for several years now. And basically, it's a power cable that would mostly run under the Hudson River, bringing hydropower from dams in Quebec, in Canada, down to New York City, which currently gets nearly all of its power from fossil fuels at first glance, because it seems like a kind of a win-win situation. There's been some sort of pushback from climate and environmental advocates, and a couple have even kind of switched sides. The main points of contention are that, well, there are really three. The first is that people are concerned about the environmental effects of these large-scale dams. So the CHPE, or CHPE, as they call it, wouldn't require the construction of any new dams. But there are concerns from some climate advocates that agreeing to this plan would bring a lot of hydropower to New York that's currently being dispersed elsewhere, and it would free up Hydro-Quebec, which is the company behind the proposal to build new dams in Canada. So that's one issue that people are concerned about. The other is, well, the other two really have to do with the Hudson River. So as I mentioned, this is a 339-mile cable. It's mostly going to go under the river, so it's going to involve digging a huge trench down there. And there are some people who are concerned about how that might disrupt the ecosystem of the Hudson River. Riverkeeper has kind of been the main environmental nonprofit in the region who's been ringing that particular alarm. And there are there's a group of towns along the river called the Hudson Seven Intermunicipal Drinking Water Council. These towns get their drinking water from the Hudson River. And of course, they're well acquainted with the various pollutions and whatnot that have plagued the river for decades and decades now. They're concerned that this type of construction, this level of construction project would only worsen the water quality. And then the final kind of concern that folks have is that the cable routes would have devastating consequences if any cargo ship or barge hit it. It's kind of unclear how realistic that is at the moment. It sounds like it's probably going to go ahead. As I mentioned, it was approved by the Public Service Commission last week. And some environmentalists who were formerly against it now feel like it's kind of the best option if the state has any hope of achieving its decarbonization goals. So it's kind of like, you know, the best of, the only kind of remaining option, basically. So, you know, it's years away from actually being completed. But if it weren't to move forward, then you're starting a process over again that would take years and years and years to play out, and we're just running out of time, basically. Right. So that's kind of a big update. We had a big story on it that we published on Friday, and then we had previously published an op-ed a couple of weeks before from somebody who is opposed to the project. So folks who want to read or who want to learn more about Chippy can do so on our website at the River Newsroom.
Now we turn to Ulster County. So we turn to you, Chris Raleigh. The Neville Resort, this is the story you've been talking about a lot on the local dish and also here on the Reporters Roundtable. And I understand you recently attended a planning board meeting that sort of decided the fate of what's going to happen to this previous resort in Ulster County. What can you tell us about the latest update on that?
Actually, before I go do that, we should just note that Cresco Labs applied today for their $36 million tax cut rebate pilot, and they chose April the 20th. To do that. And those of us who are in the know why. So anyway, that was a clever move. So the next thing after that was last night, Town Hall Worsing Planning Board finally had the, it's not really the Neverly anymore. It's the Somerset Worsing Resort, also called the Treetops Resort, application returned. And a lot of serious changes from the plan we saw last September, including a shift of the hotel part from the northern part of the property down into the southeast part. Lots of other changes, a bigger lake. The equestrian thing went away. You know, there are more, let's say 46 or 47 villas. These are high design villas that are going to be part of this, probably with a fairly strong homeowners association controlling things. And in anyway, it was interesting because the atmosphere, the board was excited. You could tell that this was the next big thing. And, honestly, as this goes through and if it does succeed and goes to construction, Worsing and the southwestern corner of Ulster County is in for a serious, what we call it, makeover. I mean, Cresco Labs on one side, this resort on the other side. Keith Rubenstein, who's the biggest mover and shaker of this for Somerset, did say that there might be 400 jobs. So this is getting serious, you know, and they're also planning. This was an interesting point that they made was that they have taken on board the fact that we have a serious shortage of affordable housing in our area, and they want to have 100 to 150 units of workforce housing on the site to house as many as 250 people. So, you know, they're taking note that, you know, to get employees here, you've got to give them somewhere to live. And that's kind of an issue, I think, that's rippling through the whole region. So anyway, they went on and on. It's just an enormous project. So many aspects to it. I imagine that it will be in the planning process for some time. They seem optimistic in that they are, going just with an expanded EAF, not trying to avoid an EIS. Those who are familiar with planning will understand what that's about. You know, maybe they'll work. Everybody was basically pretty excited. The board had a few questions. Town supervisor Terry Houck noted that the town will almost certainly reach out to someone like Dennis Larios of Brunier and Larios to oversee and work with the building department, because honestly, a project of this magnitude has never really come to the town of Warsing before. I mean, it's on a scale more than Cresco Labs. I mean, Cresco Labs is quite simple compared to this. This is like, you know, a dozen or more different aspects of things here. So that was really interesting to see. And as I said, the excitement level was there. And it affects so many different things. For instance, the O&W rail trail. They're going to work to bring the rail trail through the property and then guide it back up through Ellenville and then on, so that the rail trail will go through here, go through this property and carry on down towards Mamikating. You know, so every kind of aspect of that sort of thing is being taken into account. And another trail access would come on the eastern side of the property, where they actually have an extension of their property that goes underneath Route 52 and up the South Gully. Now, for hikers, this can be very useful, because you can then go up the South Gully, hike onto the long trail, which will take you up to Sam's Point and then on to Minnewaska. You know, there's a lot of sort of interesting aspects to this being considered. Some sad things. The skating rink is gone. There's no way to bring that back. All the buildings on the site will be demolished. And once the asbestos and the other toxics are removed, the concrete will be ground up and used for fill or repurposed as cement. I mean, everything that's there now is going to go, including the iconic round tower. That's going too. So anyway, yes, there was that. And it's going to be a 5-star luxury hotel and with a very high-end market in mind. And then there's these high-end design villas will also be hitting that same market area. And they have the look of, well, it's a lot of glass, very clean, simple design, and we'll see. Because they plan to have just like, you know, A, B, and C design, choose one, right, two, or three, and that's it. Of course, you know, there's very few places you can go and find a dwarf pine barrens forest like there is on top of the ridge. For certain kinds of people, I mean, I try to imagine what sort of people would be attracted to this. And I have to think it would be people who've already done the beaches. They've already done Dubai. They've already done, you know, a long list of things, that, you know, and they don't really want to do another beach. So instead of that, they could do this, and they can, you know, go up into the Pine Barrens and get bitten by insects and have a great time. You know, I mean, it's just the way it is. Yeah. But I don't know. You know, we will see. I think there is a market for it. And this particular world of high-end luxury travel has some interesting destinations. The north of Scotland, for instance, is a flourishing zone where people go to stay in old drafty castles. And remember, in the north of Scotland, it can rain every day and the temperature will rarely get above 50 degrees, you know, so, people are obviously prepared to, you know, muck in and enjoy themselves. So I have a feeling that they may be onto something. They are romantic. Mr. Rubinstein, as a kid, came to the Neverly, I think he said 15 times for Christmas and Passover. So he has a romantic attachment to it. We will have to see. But they're not the only people moving in, because even while they were organizing their application and taking it for the DEC and negotiating with the DEC about this and that, talking with the DEC about the bats, and I think what else? Oh, rattlesnakes. They have a rattlesnake population that has to be taken care of and looked after. But while they were doing that, a bald eagle family moved in and set up a nest next to the lake. So, as you know, bald eagles families, you can't even have, music nearby. Yeah. You've got to really be, yeah. So that added a little wrinkle to their application. But, what struck me about their whole thing was they're calling it eco resort. They're reducing the footprint from the Neverly's 95 acres of disturbance to 65 acres now. Now that's a massive cut. At the same time, they're going to have two parking lots, which will not be asphalt. It's all going to be permeable surfaces. They're working every angle to make sure that they come across and perhaps will be, environmentally friendly, and living up to this concept of being ecotourism and not disturbing things too much, not creating, environmental hazards.
Definitely something to keep our eye on. You've been listening to the Reporters Roundtable. I'm Patricio Robayo. Today I was joined by Leah Mail, other River Reporter, Chris Rowley with the Shawangunk Journal, Joseph Abraham from the Sullivan County Democrat, and Philip Pontuso from the River Newsroom. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, WJFF, the Reporters Roundtable. See everyone next month for the Reporters Roundtable. I'm Patricio Robayo.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, it's Pride time.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's the power of the salty brown liquid. Whether your favorite is soy sauce, fish sauce, Colatura, Worcestershire sauce, garum, Maggi, these bottles of pure umami are the backbone of half the world's kitchens. And we're going to dive into some amazing ones with chef Rene Redzepi, cookbook author Deep Tran, and journalist Pushpu Shah. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
This is Rosie Starr, host of Farm and Country. Join us Saturday mornings at 11 for WJFF's locally produced radio show relating to life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. Tune in to 90.5 FM, stream us live, or listen to the archive on our website, wjffradio.org. See you Saturday, just after Radio Chatskill and before Catskill Character.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Dale Blagrove is back with Pride Time, looking at LGBTQIA+ issues in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Today, he's joined again by John Vega with a wellness segment. And Sarah East Johnson from Catskills Pride joins Dale and Jim O'Sullivan to talk about the New York City Anti-Violence Project.
So the Anti-Violence Project is a New York City-based organization. We're over 40 years old. I serve on the board of that organization and was also a hotline volunteer with them for about 6 years. This is a group that originally started in response to anti-gay violence in the Chelsea area in Manhattan. A couple of volunteers sitting around a kitchen table put together a hotline number that victims of violence could call to both report their violence and to also seek services and help. That has now expanded over the past 40 years to a community-based direct service and outreach program. We provide on-site counseling. We provide advocacy across the five boroughs and in New York State, really trying to better reach survivors where they live and where they work. We also have free legal services to help people if they need support in the aftermath of violence that they've experienced. We even have an economic empowerment program for survivors of violence to help them rebuild their lives in the wake of what they've experienced.
Okay, so can you back up a little bit for me? So how are you defining anti-violence? What is the violence that we're talking about?
So violence is not an easy subject to talk about. but it happens, and all too frequently. I would say
is it physical violence? Is it psychological violence?
It can be all of those. Okay. We tend to break it down at the Anti-Violence Project into four types of violence that LGBTQ people are most likely to experience. The first of that is violence from external actors or strangers. It used to be called gay bashing. Now we know that everybody is affected by that. Unfortunately, our community suffers the same rates of violence, it seems, in intimate violence and interpersonal violence from people we love and people we know as the rest of our society. That's labeled interpersonal violence. It's used to be called just domestic violence. The third category is we know that we can hurt each other within our community. So the racism and sexism and classism that can exist in our larger society, or that does exist in our larger society, that can play out in the interactions we have with our fellow LGBTQ community members. And that is painful too. And then fourthly, we think about violence as perpetrated by the state or by institutions against LGBTQ people. This can often include, you know, police interactions. This can include bigotry experienced by religious people. So it can run the gamut from physical violence to psychological violence.
Sure. Is there a particular degree of violence that is acceptable to call to leverage or call your service?
No, the violence that you experience, even if people have a hard time naming it at first, is what we are here to help you with. And so there's no threshold level. If you've been discriminated against, if you've been the victim of violence, if somebody's trying to control you, either internally or physically, we're here to help, and we'd like to know about that.
That's incredible. I have a belief of zero tolerance as far as violence is concerned. Mm-hmm. Everyone should be kind, and there's no excuse for poor behavior, right? So that's really kind of interesting. So like, how did you get involved in the work?
How
do you find it rewarding, or why do you do it?
So when I first came out and I came to New York, I volunteered as a hotline counselor because I just had this real belief always that being safe is the first part to being true and being resilient and being able to thrive for yourself. And that hotline volunteer experience was amazing for me. Being there when people needed you most, when they were calling, because
right,
either they were in a crisis, an immediate crisis, what do I do? Where do I go? Or they were working out for themselves what had happened to them and dealing with what we would now think of as post-traumatic stress. Needed somebody to talk to, services to get connected to, et cetera. Now I'm on the board. That is a different level of service and incredibly rewarding, because now my role is seeing the staff build more and more and more enriched services and reaching out to more people in different ways. We now do so much in so many places.
So I want to backtrack with you a little bit, and I'm hoping I'm not crossing a line or ethical questions, but can you give us an example, or what was your very first call like?
I think I was so nervous at my first call. I don't know if I remember that one.
Was your second call like?
But I do have calls that still resonate for me and that I still remember very vividly. I had a call from a guy who said he was sitting in his studio apartment. His friend was with him. He didn't know what to do because his then boyfriend, or however they defined their relationship, had left the apartment about half an hour ago. And his friend, who is a nurse, said he should go to the emergency room. But what should I do? The idea that this person was just so stuck, you know, so frozen, even when having the help of a friend who's also a professional to talk it through, to think about a safety plan. Before he was comfortable going to the emergency room, he wanted to know what happened, it turned out, when I get back to my apartment. What do I do? And we had some suggestions for him about safety planning, about who to reach out to, about where he might think about going, and then some ways that our office staff could help when they were back online or open, as we would have said then.
Sure. It's very paralyzing, you know, to be in that type of situation that people maybe really don't understand. And then what's even harder is, you know, I don't and I almost kind of speak a little bit for my own experience. I think the hardest thing is not returning. The hardest thing is leaving.
It can be for people.
Yeah.
And a big part of this work is helping people figure out where they are so that they can move forward. And what are their goals? What are their hope do they want to accomplish? You know, there are other people who have called to say, I just want to make sure this is in the record books because somebody slugged me when I was coming out of a bar and ran away. You should know that happened to people so that we can think about how it doesn't happen again, or what we need in the community to have enough people around that doesn't happen.
What can people do about, since you mentioned, like, you know, slugging coming out of the bar or something like that, or a restaurant, or just being on the street, right? Because we know that we can be on the street just walking along the way and someone will just yell out obscenities at us regardless of where we are in the community, right? Mm-hmm. So what do people do? What can we do about violence? So how does someone reach AVP?
We have a 24-hour hotline. Open 7 days a week, every day of the year, 212-714-1141. That's available for both English and Spanish language speakers. 212-714-1141 is that number. It's available to everybody, including the folks in Sullivan and Orange counties. We have some information about the types of calls we've gotten from this area. We also have a website, avp.org. There's a form on that website. If you just want to report something so that we know about it, we can aggregate it. We can do advocacy around it. If you want to learn about the issues, there's a text to chat function that's available some of the time as well. If you want to communicate with us that way, or if you're in a situation where you think somebody can hear you and you don't want to be talking about the issues you're facing. And so that's avp.org. Some of our calls, they determined that over the last couple of years, we've had about 80 calls come from the Hudson Valley.
Wow. It's not as quiet as we think now, is it?
Unfortunately, no.
Wow. That's crazy.
Affect us everywhere. So of those 80 calls, about 30% were domestic violence, intimate partner violence, mm-hmm. a better term. About a quarter of them were hate violence. 11% were sexual violence, actually, where people were either touched or worse as part of the violence they were experiencing and their bodies were in some way compromised. 24% of those callers reported experiencing multiple forms of violence, and that is not unusual. Out of those calls, 60% of the people who identified their race or ethnicity were people of color. 29% of those were transgender or gender nonconforming, which unfortunately suggests that the violence and the epidemic of violence we're seeing against transgender people, especially transgender people of color, is playing out in our local communities as well.
Wow. And considering our history, that it's kind of amazing to me that that's something that is even still happening, right? Because the transgender in our community has been a big driving force for part of initiation and progress to where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are slowly getting there. Yes.
Well, and just for our viewers' sake, I know you hear me chuckling on a few things. If I'm chuckling, it's only because I'm very nervous, because this is a very, very serious and mm-hmm. Important topic, right? Yes. And it's something that, because I personally have an experience, I don't know how to process it. So right. Definitely, is there something that you can say of anyone that is listening out there, Jim, of what they should do?
The first thing I would say is to remember you're not alone, to think about self-care, you know, breathing deeply, centering yourself as best you can in the situation that you find yourself. And then reaching out for help. If hopefully directly to us, we would be there for you. There is this wonderful community through Catskills Pride and these groups that we have organized for ourselves and our communities. So reaching out for help if you're feeling or have been victimized is always the first thing to do. No one is in this alone, and we have all faced it in some way. So you're right. It's a very nervous topic.
You know, there are other services, and I also think if you're living in this area, there is a group that you can explain a little bit to us about that I had no idea existed. and I think is powerful and important as well. Can you give us a little bit of insight to this group?
Absolutely. But before I talk about our local service organizations, I also wanted to share that when I was 19 and brand new to New York City, which is over 30 years ago, I experienced homophobic violence. I had my head was shaved and I was, you know, a tough new New York City lesbian. And I intersected with a off-duty police officer march across the Brooklyn Bridge. And these officers threw my bike on the ground, threw me on the ground and yelled homophobic things at me. And I was so new to the city. I didn't have many, you know, friends or family. And I called AVP and it was, it was a lifeline for me. It was so helpful just to hear this is unusual. This is, you know, you're not in this alone. That just the really comforting words of having a voice on the other end of the line who understood what had happened to me was so powerful and meaningful. So I just want, if there's people in our area that want direct services, I want to first uplift Fearless. They have two locations in Monticello and one in Liberty. All of their services are free. They do prevention and education, and they also offer residential services that are open to everyone. And they also have counseling and legal support. So their hotline is 845-562-5340. And they also have translators available. I spoke at length with the executive director, Kellyanne, and I was really impressed with the amount of work that they had done to be inclusive of the LGBTQIA community members in our area. And there's another organization that serves Pike and Wayne counties, because I know that's also in our listening area. And they're called VIP, Victims Intervention Program. Their website is vipempowers.org. And their hotline is 570-296-HELP. They also are free. They offer shelter. They offer counseling. They offer legal support.
And, you know, I'm going to circle this back to AVP. I think they really established a great foundation for other organizations to model and really to provide that type of support, assistance, care, you know, in our community. And, you know, Jim, I want to thank you definitely for, you know, all that you do, you know, with the organization and definitely making sure that in essence lights are on and there are things, you know, there are things available and services out there available to help us. You know, one of the things that's interesting, you talked about a little bit about self-care. And one of the things that we do at Pride Time is I usually end up and coming up will be like my wellness. I call my wellness expert, John Vega, you know, to talk a little bit more about aromatherapies or, you know, other type of holistics type of approach. He's going to share some kind of remedies or ideas, you know, to kind of help, you know, help calm the situation in your mind, as well as, you know, kind of moving forward to sometimes it's a matter of just changing that environment just a little bit that helps gives you the strength to do the things that you need to do. Mm-hmm. So I really thank you guys so much for taking the time to join us here on Pride Time. And hopefully we'll be extending this conversation a little bit more. It's a very, very important topic. So hopefully, Jim, you'll come back. Hopefully, Sarah, you'll come back. Hopefully we'll get the people from VIP and Fearless involved as well. Because these 20 minutes of information, I just kind of believe could save somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So thank you. Thank you so much. John Vega, thank you so much for joining us in this episode of Pride Time. You know, the timing is perfect. You know, we were talking earlier regarding the Anti-Violence Project and really the great things they do for the community and their clients in those type of really challenging settings and environments. One of the things that I find interesting that I would love to have a discussion with you about is
particularly in times like that, when you're dealing in anti-violence situations, really developing some sorts of rituals in your life where you can kind of balance yourself or ground yourself while you're figuring yourself out through such a challenging transition. And I want to kind of get a view from you is, what are your rituals that you use on a daily basis to kind of get you going, particularly when you're feeling stuck?
That's a great question. I think it's perfect, especially now, what we are, everyone, I believe, is going through something globally. Yeah. So it's a great topic. And I get this asked a lot in my private practice with my clients. And I believe the first thing and the most important thing is setting an intention. And more so than anything, setting a daily intention, because that seems more feasible, seems something that you can control. And in situations of violence or when you feel stuck, most time, you know, one feels that you've lost control. And I think setting that intention will help you regain that control of your life.
Good. So like an intention of owning my life.
Yeah. And that can be done daily. So, for example, I like doing that. You mentioned ritual earlier. So I have my morning ritual and it's very simple. I every time I wake up in the morning, I make sure I have a glass of water. And as I'm drinking that water, I'm visualizing the water, you know, penetrating my body and really cleansing my insides and preparing my body, kind of creating a clean slate for the day. So that's a very simple, again, it can be meditative and it can be a visualization. And it's a good way to start the day.
You know, I agree. So I've had a stressful day and I'm just trying to get through it. What would you recommend me to do to get through that day? What would you recommend to kind of, you know, for those that are really in situations where they need to ground and motivate? Ground and motivate.
Well, one of the big things that helps helps me and helps a lot of my clients when they say that exact thing, you know, how I've been going through the day. I did my morning ritual. I did everything to set my day. And unfortunately, something happened and it just brought me down, my mood. I feel like it's the end of the world and that very much can happen. Well, I believe that taking deep breath and really taking the time to breathe and taking the time to slow down your heart rate is very important to kind of reset yourself if you find yourself with some kind of obstacle that seems a true challenge. Sure. So I would say taking a break, breathing again, meditative breathing, intentional breathing, that would be something that I would recommend. Have you heard of saging? Have you heard of the actual smudging?
Smudging?
Yes,
oh my God, if you stay in my house the day after you leave, I am so smudging my house. That's all I do.
Wow.
any guest that comes to my house, that's like the hour after they're gone, I'm walking around with my little wand. So.
Oh, that's funny. Do you use sage or do you use some other herbs to smudge your
face? I use sage and dried lavender.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Why do you use the dry lavender?
Because we have it in the yard and it just smells cool and it's burnable.
Okay. Well, lavender essential oil. Yeah. Lavender is very, it's sedating. It's very calming. So that's excellent. Well, the other thing that you can burn is, have you heard of Palo Santo? Palo Santo is amazing.
What is it?
Palo Santo. It's like a twig. Yeah. And it's really good for cleansing, like spiritual cleansing, emotional cleansing, strengthening your mind and your spirit. So that's a nice way to also, again, if you're having a rough day, just saging yourself, to prepare you for whatever challenge you have ahead.
All right. So the one last thing that I'm thinking about, I want something that says self-love.
Give ourselves something that we know that we need. You know, it could be a great meal. It could be cooking an amazing dish that you haven't had in a long time. You've been having takeout all this time because, I don't know, you've been stressed and you don't have the time to cook. So self-love can be, you know what, let me slow down. Let me take the time. Let me go to the store, buy my favorite ingredients, my favorite protein, and make myself indulge into a beautiful meal with my favorite wine. I mean, that shows to me self-love.
And I think people need that. People need to know it's okay to show care and self-love for themselves. John, I love talking to you because the information and the insights that you give definitely, you know, keep me in a good way where I just want to learn more. So hope you'll come back. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Sarah East, and I'm on the board of directors of Catskills Pride. And we have our monthly socials that have been building in popularity. Our next one is on April 23rd. It's going to be at High Voltage in Mountaindale. And they have a big outdoor space with all these different like fire pits and an outdoor food truck. And then they also have an indoor area. And we're going to have some, we're going to have a drag queen, Bell Pepper will be joining us. And we're also going to have some special fiery surprises.
As far as fiery surprises is concerned, I heard that you guys are going to have fire dancers.
Yes.
Okay. You're not even saying it. You're just nodding your head. Oh, my gosh. I think I just let out of a secret. I'm so sorry.
I didn't know
my God.
It was supposed to be a surprise or not, so I kept it in the bag.
Well, you know, because the driving force for me, as I mentioned in the last episode, for me to get to High Voltage is the skirts on the fire dancers to see if they catch on fire. And also Mountaindale, because, of course, it has my name in it. So I can't think of any other reason to go out there. And what else do you have coming up for us?
Just to mention, I'm a member of the Yulin Fire Volunteer Fire Department. So if any skirts catch on fire, I will be there to put them out.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
We have another big event on June 18th. We're going to have a big pride celebration in the town of Calicoon.
Any details or scoops you can give me on that?
We're centering all of the LGBTQ businesses in Calicoon, of which there are like 10 in that one small town. It'd be uplifting the Calicoon Pantry, the Calicoon Distillery, Engine, and then all of the other businesses are also coming together to support us in this event.
And that's Pride Time, and we'll hear back from Dale and Pride Time next month as well. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank for over 100 years. Meeting banking needs with a variety of deposit and loan products. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. From Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And from listeners like you.
All her life, Stephanie was careful about her and her family's health.
She made sure I took the flu shots, we took the shingle shot, we took the pneumonia shot. I mean, I was like a pincushion. But
she fell into conspiracy theories, including lies about COVID vaccines. Her family says that cost Stephanie her life. Her story Monday afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Good songs about cats are surprisingly hard to find. So please join me for those that I've hunted out, and there are some good ones, on the Wacko Load of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, Sunday afternoon at 3.
Farm and Country is coming up next. The forecast for the Catskills in northeast Pennsylvania, a little cooler than yesterday, mostly cloudy skies, a high of 57, slight chance of a rain shower tonight, a low of 43, and tomorrow, partly sunny and a high near 68.
WJFF, Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and northeast Pennsylvania.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.